All right, go back to Hebrews chapter 2, 5 through 18, and find any phrase that tells me why God would let His Son, the radiance of His glory, His exact representation, the one who made purifications for sins, the one who sat down at the right hand of the Majesty on high, the Son of God, the King of kings, Lord of lords, why would He allow him? And I really need to change that word. It's not allow. Why would He cause him to suffer? Find the phrase in the text. Find the phrase in the text. I heard two or three at the same time. Let me, and you, I think that's what I was hearing. I want you to look at verse 10. And you tell me so you know I'm not making it up. Verse 10. Why did He do it? Find the phrase. To make the author of their salvation perfect through suffering. All right, find me another one. I know I'm being mean today, but that's... Sorry. Nah. Yeah, and if you'll look at verse 17, He makes a specific statement. He was made to be like us in every way so that He might be a merciful and faithful high priest. So what was God's intent? What did God have in mind? He wanted Jesus, and it's not so much He wanted, that's the way, it looks to me like He wanted Jesus to understand what we were going through. I really think He wanted us to know that He understood. I think God was wanting us to know, God wanted us to understand that Jesus knows what it's like to be us. That's why He had the taste of death. Now I want you to focus for a second on verse 11. Because of what Jesus went through in His suffering, verse 11 is true. Both the one who makes men holy and those who are made holy are of the same family. Right? We all share in that. He went through that. I go through that. So the one who calls men to be holy and the ones who are called to be holy are the same. So much so that look at verse 11. And if you've not underlined verse 11, if you've not underlined it, you ought to. And if you've not memorized it, you ought to. So Jesus is not, underline the word not, Jesus is, say it, not. He is not ashamed to call them brothers. Has anybody ever been ashamed of you? Random. Across the board. Anybody ever been ashamed of you? Why? They were ashamed of something you did. Why was somebody ashamed of you? I did something they didn't want me to do. Why were they ashamed of you? Guys. Didn't live up to their expectation. Why was somebody ashamed of you, John? The actions I did. All right, now let's be a little bit more specific for a second. Why was somebody ashamed of you? I was an alcoholic. I wasn't doing right. I was a junkie. I committed adultery. I hurt people. I damaged people. And Jesus is not ashamed to call me brother. Did you hear it? I didn't say it. Jesus said it. It said it. We got to rethink Jesus, y'all. Because what happens to us in church? when we hear about somebody that's gone through some horrible thing, when we hear that somebody's done some horrible thing, what do we tend to do? Those of us who grew up going to church, those of us who grew up knowing those rules in the church, the church house rules, those of us who grew up knowing the facts about Jesus, those of us who grew up knowing the rules about living a Christian life, and what's the phrase say? Avoid every appearance of evil. What did we learn? How did we react when we see that or when we hear that? How did we react? We were almost ashamed. Well, not almost. We were ashamed. And we cut them off. We stepped back away from them. What did God just tell me to do about Jesus? To rethink Jesus. We see Jesus. We see Jesus. We see Jesus. How? Standing in the middle of the congregation doing what? This is my brother. Folks, the guy looked at me and said, I didn't know whether I could shake your hand or come talk to you at all. Thank God Jesus doesn't feel that way. Where is he right now? Where is he right now? He is, if I'm reading this right, he is in the presence of the congregation, right? He is right here, and what is he saying? Jared is my brother. I am not ashamed of him. Jay is my brother. I'm not ashamed of him. Michael is my brother. I'm not ashamed of him. And I got a few sisters in here too. And he's not ashamed of us. He stands in the midst of the congregation and declares it. That's what his suffering did for us. Let's rethink his suffering. Let's rethink Jesus. And let's start seeing Jesus instead of being ashamed of us and being disgusted with us and sting and just, just can't believe they did that again. See him again saying, I'm standing here, I'm telling you, I'm not ashamed of you. How far would he go to prove that? Keep reading. Why was he able to do that? Keep reading. We share in flesh and blood, right? That's what makes us human. That's what makes us brothers and sisters in this flesh. And Jesus did the same thing. If he shared in flesh and blood like we did, and it says he did, so he did, what does that tell us? Before we read the rest of the verse, before we read what God had to say about it, tell me what it says to us. He's gone through the same things I've gone through. He's felt the same feelings. He's had the same fears. He's felt the same anger. He's felt the same temptation. He's felt the same desires. Now, we're going to prove all that. We're going to see all those things. In this letter where he's trying to get church folks like us to rethink Jesus and to stop seeing him as just the rule giver who sets all the church house. He's trying to get us to rethink Jesus and see him as he is. He is the one who tasted death. He is the one that suffered so that he could say and prove to me, I know you don't get it. I know you don't understand it, but I'm not ashamed of you. You did terrible things wrong. You did things I would have never done, but I'm not ashamed of you. Nobody else in the world may love you, but I do. I am not ashamed of you. And how can he do that? Because he lived it just like us, y'all. He had the same kind of body. So what does that mean? He knows about being hungry? Does he know about being hungry? Yeah. Does he know about being thirsty? Died that way. Remember, he's 40 days hungry out there in the wilderness. That's something we've never known. 4 minutes maybe, but not 40 days. Thirsty? He died thirsty. Angry? Yeah. Cleared out a temple. Distressed. Troubled. So sad he could die. Yeah. On his face, begging God, with a loud voice it says, begging God, don't make me drink this cup. Don't make me taste this taste. What did he do for us? He shared in flesh and blood so that he could say to us, I'll take care of you. Let me take care of this. Not only am I not ashamed of you, I'm going to say, look at what he says. I'm going to destroy him who holds the power of death, that is the devil. What did Jesus do when he died? Read the phrase and tell me so you know I'm not making it up. What did it say Jesus did by his death? When he suffered for us, when he tasted the death that I have to taste, what did he do? He destroyed him who holds the power of death, that is the devil. Hang on a second. What did he do? Put it in your words. I know what the verse says. Put it in your words. What did he do? He beat the devil. What did he do? Put it in your words. He saved us from the devil. What did he do? Put it in your words. Rethink Jesus for a second and tell me again what took place that day when he was on that cross and he screamed at his Father, God, why'd you forsake me? And then gave up the ghost. What did he do? What was he doing in that moment? What did he do? He rescued you. He took power away from the devil. What did he do? Put it in your words. He won. He took away the power of death. What did he do? Now, that's why I said rethink. How long could we go on that, y'all? We need to start thinking that way, y'all. Because I'm serious. Even though we try to be really good Christian type people and we smile the right smile and read the right verse and go to the right church at the right time and stand up and sit down and sing when we're supposed to. Do we ever stand up and sing? We need to start that to make sure we're a real church. But here's the point. Here's the point. Jesus destroyed the one who had power over death. So what in the world are we living so afraid for? Why are we living with any kind of allegiance to that enemy? Why are we giving him any kind of say? Why are we giving him any kind of influence? Why are we giving him any kind of power over us? He has none. He has been, according to God, had his head crushed. According to this, he's been destroyed. According to 1 John, he's been brought to nothing. He has been destroyed. He has been overcome. You write the verse. He has been overcome. He's been destroyed. He's been disarmed. He has been defeated. He has been crushed. So what does that leave me? Read the next phrase. What does that leave me? I'm free. I can be free from the fear of death. We won't talk about it in here because I'm not for sure we'd be open enough about this one. And maybe it's a discussion for later. But some of us have been living in dread of fear, a dreadful fear of death. And if it's not your own death, it's the fear of death of somebody you love. I love you, but I know that. I know you're worried sick. Some of you are worried sick about something happening to you. But others of you are almost controlled by worrying about something happening to someone you love. Does the devil have the power of death anymore? No. Can you be free from the slavery that comes with that fear of death? Yes. He did that for us. Let's rethink Jesus. So instead of worrying about those horoscopes, instead of worrying about those superstitious things, instead of worrying about those traditional old wives' fable things that people bring up, no, we have been set free. He has been destroyed, and now I can be free. Now, how was he able to do that? How was he able to do that? Because he became like me. He became just like me. He became just like me and said, let me take care of that for you. I'll taste death. That's what I'll do. And I, through my suffering, will make sure you know that I'm not ashamed of you. And I know it's scary out there, so let me show you. You don't have to be scared anymore. I destroyed the devil. He has no say in your life anymore. And I can set you free from the fear of death. come on. Come on. Don't sit there in chains. Don't sit there enslaved. Don't sit there being bound by that stuff. Let Him set you free. Now, the last one we're going to discuss is coming. I love that He said He's made like us because He wants to help us. We're going to get more on that. You see it? 16, He didn't come to help angels. He came to help us. Keep reading. And He became like us in every way, a merciful and faithful high priest. All that's good stuff. A merciful and faithful high priest in the service of God, and He made atonement for the sins of the people. What does that mean? That phrase right there, what does that mean? He paid for it. Give me another word for atonement. Don't give me a Bible word. Give me another definition for atonement. Satisfied. My favorite word. My favorite word right here. It's as if when we sin, we know we're going to suffer. We're going to be punished. We are going to face the consequences of our sin. We're going to face horrible consequences of death and hell and all those horrible things. And what did Jesus do? He wrapped Himself up in human flesh like us, lived like us, and what did He do? He drank that cup. He suffered that death. He crushed that enemy. He set us free from the fear of death. And when it came to our sins, God now looks at me and says, I'm satisfied. Have I done enough, God? Never, but I'm satisfied. What do you want me to do, God? Live your life for me, but I'm satisfied. Can I do a little bit more? I'm sure you could always do a little bit more, but I'm satisfied. How did He get that way? Who was it that satisfied God? Jesus. It's done, y'all. It is done. Quit dragging it around, worrying about it, fretting about it, making your family miserable about it, and let God be satisfied with you. Yeah, but I need to do better. Yep, you sure do. Me too. I need to do better, don't you? But is God satisfied with me? Is God satisfied with me? I'm saying me. Yeah. God satisfied with you? How do I know? And I'll need to take care of my stuff I can take care of, but I'm going to let Jesus take care of the stuff that Jesus takes care of. And He said, by that death, do you see what He did? By that death, He proved to me that He wasn't ashamed of me. By that death, He set me free from that devil and the power of the fear of death. By that death, He satisfied God for my sins. You want an extra one? Verse 18. This is where we'll spend the rest of our time. And because He suffered when He was tempted. Let's talk a second. What does it mean He suffered? What does it mean He suffered being tempted? Somebody, you got to talk to me. You got to talk to me. He struggled with it. Is that right? Somebody, let's respond to that word. Brenda just said that Jesus struggled with temptation. Did He struggle?
No way. He's Jesus.
And that's how we've been kind of learned. Well, He didn't struggle. Did Jesus struggle?
Terms, we have that place where we have a limit to how much suffering we will go through. Jesus went far, far beyond that.
Yeah.
He suffered in ways we can't even imagine.
Yeah, you know what Bob was saying a second ago is so right. There's so many other people that have suffered in the world. I can't imagine what they've gone through. Jesus' suffering goes on beyond even theirs, right? I want us to go back to struggling and temptation for a second, because I want us to develop that thought for a second. What struggling is there to temptation? What struggle is there with temptation? Oh, isn't it repetitive? It just keeps coming and keeps coming. What's the struggle with temptation? I want to give up. What's the struggle? It looks so good. Okay, I don't want to do that, but you just said you want to do that. So you said you don't want to do that. But you said you didn't want to do that. But you don't want to do it, but you want to do it. What's wrong with you? That's us. That's it. Isn't he describing us? Right? And if we say it, and I know in church you're not supposed to talk about these kind of things, but the honest truth is everybody in here has that. Maybe different forms. There may be different things that tempt you, but the truth is every one of us has those things that pull on us, that pressure. And we don't want to do them, but we want to do them. But we don't want to do them, but we want to do them. But we don't want to do them, but we want to do them. And so we're struggling to do what's... Suffering comes when? Struggling comes when? When you want to do it, but you resist doing it. What did we just learn about Jesus? There would have been no suffering at all had there been no real temptation. There'd been no suffering at all if there hadn't been desire attached to that temptation. Does that make sense? Folks, Jesus didn't overcome these temptations by going, Son of God, Son of God, Son of God. Presto, bingo, bango. It's done. No. He went through them just like we did. He wrapped himself up in this kind of skin with this kind of blood, and he had the same kind of feelings, the same kind of desires, the same kind of longings, the same kind of needs, and he was struggling with that. He was suffering because of that. I didn't write that. He wrote that. What does it mean he suffered? What does it mean he struggled? Somebody else, tell me one more. Last call. No, you can't go there. Yeah, and Hebrews 4 will say just like us. But we're going to get to that in chapter 4. I don't want you to go there yet. I don't want you jumping off. I just want you to talk about your experience. What's suffering? What is that suffering of temptation?
For me, the suffering was knowing how bad it was going to be, but still wanting it, not understanding it. It feels like your heart betrays you. Like, my heart is betraying me. If I know it's so bad, why do I still want it?
Okay, so Catherine's just introduced us to a thought. Catherine's just introduced us to a thought we hadn't dealt with yet. Because I want to do it. I don't want to do it. I don't want to do it because of God, and that's what God said. But I want to do it because my flesh or my eye or my pride is screaming at me. But I know while I'm making this fight, while I'm struggling, I know if I do this, what's going to happen? Bad things, horrible things. I'm going to end up in jail, or I'm going to end up dead, or I'm going to end up world blowing. I mean, there's all kinds of things that are going to happen. And what do? I choose that same thing again. So where's the struggle there? It's not just with the devil, it's with me. Why in the world would I think like that? Why in the world? How many times does anybody in here ask why? Why would I do that? Why would I think like that? I hear it sometimes when those of us who have not been guilty of a particular sin want to comment about somebody's guilt in a particular sin. I just don't understand why anybody would do that. Does that sound like anybody in here? You don't have to hold up your hand. I've heard you. Guess what? There's people saying that about the sin you have the worst time with, too. I can't believe anybody would do that. Why would anybody do that? Why would anybody do it?
All have the same problem.
Same problem. You only read some really encouraging but confusing words. Read Romans 7 and watch that struggle within Paul about doing the things that he wants to do. But he doesn't want to do. But he wants to do. But he doesn't want to. Yeah, you get the same struggle.
I think it's suffering because it's
Excellent, excellent point. Did you hear what Melanie said? She said, when you're really serious about giving up the temptation, I wish we could give it up, don't you? I'm going to give up temptation this year. Yeah, that's what I'm going to do. That's my New Year's resolution. Going to give up temptation. Would that not be cool? I'd be in. I'm in. It don't work that way, y'all. But if I decide I'm going to give up that sin, whatever the sin is, if it's a substance, if it's a relationship, if it's a lie, whatever it is, whatever the deceitful, whatever the distressing, whatever the troublesome thing is, if I'm going to give it up, that means I don't just not do the wrong thing. I have to make decisions that will keep me from doing the wrong thing. I have to give up friends. I have to give up habits. I have to give up people and places and things that there's nothing wrong with, but I know I have to give them up because the moment I'm with that person, or if the moment I'm in that moment I'm in that place, or the moment I have that thing, guess what? I'm in trouble. It sounds like we understand. Now the point is, do you know that Jesus understands? He suffered being tempted. Read it. He suffered being tempted. That struggle you feel, He suffered it. Now read the next phrase. Since He suffered it, what can He do? What does your verse say? What does your version say? He can help. Able to help. Give me another way to say it. Anybody? Wants to help. We're all reading the same thing. Okay. My old Bible said it this way. He is able to succor. S-U-C-C-O-R. It's a word we don't use anymore. What does it mean? Succor. And you can't say help, Louise. It's the picture of a mama cradling her child. Yeah. It's a mama reaching down and picking up the crying baby and holding that baby to her, to comfort her, to give her what she needs, to protect her. What's the picture? Jesus, because He suffered being tempted, is able to do what? To help me, to comfort me, to protect me, to empower me, to mature me, to whatever, right? Now, folks, you know what the word actually means? You'll check it out. I'll let you check it out. But I've checked it out years ago. I saw it, and I checked it out just about a month ago when I was restudying for this lesson. The word help, the word succor here, that phrase, means Jesus runs, I'm not making it up, runs to the cry. Runs to the cry. You do it all the time. If you've got little ones, your children, grandchildren, nieces, nephews, if you've ever been around a child, and you can tell the difference in their cries, right? You can tell the mad cry that you basically just have to say, well, we're going to see who wins. And my recommendation is, Mom and Dad, you better win, because it's not going to get better if you don't win soon. But is there a cry that's not mad? Is there a cry that's not lonesome? Is there a cry that's not whiny? Is there a cry that is, I'm hurt and I need somebody right now? You can tell the difference, can't you? Can you tell the difference? Yep. Mackenzie's been in training to hear that difference for 10 months now. Almost, well, 11 months. Almost. So when you're hurting, when you're wanting to give in, what is the picture of Jesus? Hebrews 2, what's the picture of Jesus? Say it. Jesus is running to your cry.
I almost like the exact
That's right. Yeah. You see them about to do something they're not supposed to do. You see them doing something that's going to hurt them. Your reaction is, well, I've told you once, I've told you 1,000 times. No. Your reaction is, well, you made your bed, you can lie in it. No. What does Jesus do? He runs to the cry. Jesus knows how it feels. And just like the Father sent angels to comfort Him, He stands ready to come running to comfort us. Guys, He's not ashamed of you. Haven't you felt like sometimes you had to be ashamed of you because of the things you thought and the ways you felt? Oh, and the things you've done. Does He understand? Has He suffered that? And what does He do when you're hurting? Say it again. He runs to your cry. He is able to succor those, all those who are being tempted. Who does that include? Say it. Who does that include? Me. Maybe it's time for us to rethink Jesus. Maybe it's time for us to rethink Jesus. And when we eat this bread and drink this cup, maybe today's a good time to rethink Jesus. When you eat that bread and remember His body, if your body right now is going through some cravings, if you're having to resist physical and fleshly temptations, does Jesus understand? Has He suffered that way before? Yeah. If your heart is confused and conflicted and you just don't know what to do, and you don't know what to do, and you're just so confused, does He understand? So when you eat that bread, when you drink that cup, rethink Jesus and see Him running. He is coming. He's coming for you. He wants to put His arms around you and pull you away from the problem. He wants to pull you away from the danger. He wants to pull you where He's safe and comforted. And just make sure you knew that. He took care of the devil. You don't have to be afraid of him anymore. Let's remember Jesus and thank God for that rescue while we remember Jesus.